right. Welcome to episodes 3 and 4 of the Rich and Turbo Heavy Half Hour. I'm Rich. You can find me on X at Fuzz Doom Rip, and you can see me writing for Musipedia of Metal. I'm also a Doom Charts contributor. Say hello to the Fuzz Master General himself, Turbo. Turbo, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Awesome.
Can't find me anywhere.
Turbo is eternal. So you can't find him anywhere, but he's also everywhere. Cool. So let's hop right in. We're going to talk about our album of the week this week. A little bit about what we are excited about from albums that are coming up. We're recording this on Friday the 12th. So I'm going to talk about a couple that are coming out today, but we'll hit upon Turbo's future classic song segment. And we have a super cool interview that we're setting up for from the legend himself, Tony Reed. So let's jump right in. Turbo, what do we got for our album of the week this week?
The album of the week would be Iota, Pentasomnia.
Awesome. We always pick the hard titles to say, right?
Band out of Utah. It's been 16 years in the making for their second album, which a lot of people probably not familiar with them. But
yeah, I had no idea. I had no idea, but I saw it on Small Stone, right? So
yeah, through Small Stone, kind of a cosmic desert rock feel to it. Well, they say, actually, my point of view on this whole thing is I think it's like it starts off like you're stumbling out of a bar in a desert and you're roaming around, and then you find a spaceship and you take off, and then you crash the spaceship, and then you're in the desert again, and then it ends with you walking towards the sun. That's my whole take about how this thing sounds to me.
Damn.
But they seem to, you know, they say it's about 5 dreams. Each song represents a dream.
I like your description better. But yeah, I mean, there's tons of like atmosphere in it. Like to me, it's not like psychedelic in the normal psychedelic that you would kind of think of psychedelic. It's almost like a shoegazy psychedelic heaviness to it. But yeah,
I would say cosmic.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No. Awesome. Yeah. I got a little bit early and I was immediately hooked. It was super cool. And then once the vinyl landed, it's kind of even another experience with how awesome it sounds on vinyl.
Yeah. And I think that Andy Patterson, the drummer on here, I think he went to the school of Keith Moon of drumming, because he doesn't stop. I mean, it's not overwhelming. It's not typical on the 2, on the 4, on the, you know, to me, it's beautiful. It's just, it doesn't, it's, I don't know how to explain it.
No, that's my favorite school of drumming. I once heard someone describe Keith Moon as like him, the sound of his drums are drums falling down the stairs. And I just love that description because it just, I think it's perfect. So.
Yeah, the whole thing is great. Sounds great. Something that I'm happy to hear from them. I had kind of touched base with Joey Toscano when the first album came out. Me and him corresponded through stonerrock.com for a while. So it's good to hear this album, that they're still making good music and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I think I speak for you when I say this too, and a few of our group, that something drops from Small Stone and it's pretty much an immediate buy. I can't think of the last time I didn't grab something that was released off by Small Stone. So yeah, great combination there. Yeah, great pick. I think a lot of people dug this, and I think it was not necessarily on anybody's radar. It wasn't on my radar for sure. I was not familiar with the band before, so
it's a total surprise, and I was very, very happy about it. I just wish, once again, I want lyrics so I know what's going on. Most bands these days aren't putting out lyrics.
Yeah, we need to ensure that's happening. I like the bands who put the lyrics right on Bandcamp too for their songs. Sometimes you can expand out a section and they'll have lyrics for songs on there too. But yeah, we definitely need inserts with
Oh, wait, did
lyrics.
the album have lyrics?
I don't think I have to look. I don't think so, but I have to look. I'll let you know.
I didn't check my album.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. Well, regardless, Salt Lake City's Iota is our album of the week. Small Stone, thank you very much. We want more from Small Stone. Yeah, speaking of wanting more, let's talk about what we're excited for, albums that are coming out in the next couple of weeks. I'll start with just something that came out today that I've been obsessing over. I think I'm having a mad passionate relationship with the new Tarot record. That I know, unfortunately, you don't love as much as I do, but musically, I think it's amazing. I think the organ work and the keys are amazing. I think the complexity, it's almost like 70s prog without being like way over the top proggy. And to me, I can see myself listening to this record every day for the rest of the year without a doubt. That's how much I enjoy it. And it's not a lot that I can say, not a lot of records that have come out recently with how much I listen to. Where I can say that. So I'm looking forward to spending more time with the new Iota. I'm sorry, with the new Tarot record. But how about you, Terry? What do you got?
The new Abrams is coming out. When's that coming out? Is that soon, or is that going to be another one that's like in June or something?
No, it's coming. The new Abrams comes out on May 24th, so
Oh.
a little more than a month away. But I have it on good authority that it's pretty killer. If you liked the last one, you will most certainly like the new one that's called Blue City. So yeah, that's dropping on 5/24.
And there's a band that I'm familiar with that's probably going to be another one that not too many people know about. It's called Juke Cove. Album's called Tempest. That comes out May 3rd.
No, you got me on this one. What is this band? What would you say that they sound
Well, you would ask me that, wouldn't you?
like?
They're out of Germany. They're psych doom rock. They are. Let's see, I had their last release was in May 2021. Their album was Remedy. I had that album, which was all instrumentals.
Oh, cool. Okay.
But
Juke
this one,
Cove.
if you like the whole psychedelic doom rock sound, which has become one of my favorites.
Yeah, that'll work. A lot of cool stuff coming out of Germany right now. I get a lot of bands from various, stoner psych. That type of stuff that are coming at it from Germany. Cool. I will put that on my list because I did not have that one. The other one I just want to call out that obviously we had Todd from Ripple on last episode. The new Watchers album, filled with riffs. I think that one is going to be one that, especially the crew that we deal with and talk to on X and everywhere else, I think are going to love the new Watchers record. So watch out for the new Watchers
Watch
record.
out for the
Too easy,
Watchers.
too easy. Anything else terrible you had on your radar?
Doing other than the Melvins, comes out next week, doesn't
Yeah, it's so weird and wonderful. The first track is like 20 minutes long. So we know some people who won't
it? Hmm.
dig that, but yeah, the new Melvins record is going to be for Melvins fans. It's not like this is going to expand their fan base for in any capacity, but it's really good. The first song is the long song. It goes in like, I don't know, 50 different directions, and it could be like 10 different songs. So yeah, the new
That's
Melvins is
cool.
gonna kick ass too, I think. Cool. All right. Now, on to the Turbo Future Classic Song of the Week. We didn't get to this last week, so this will be our first time that we're going to do the Future Classic Song. Turbo, what do you got? What's our classic song of the week?
I'm going to go out of LA, a band called Max Boogie Overdrive, in
Nice.
their song Freakazoid. It's just a killer track. This is complete heavy hard rock, stoner rock, whatever. Just a heavy driving song.
That album surprised me out of nowhere. Actually, I had it for like a couple of months and listened to it once and then kind of forgot, put it on my list. And it's like, oh, it's coming out in March, right? End of March, I think it came out, or beginning of April. And picked it
Yeah,
up
end of
again.
March.
Yeah, picked it up again and was like, wow, what's going on here? How did I kind of ignore this for a couple of months? But yeah, that album's killer. Freakazoid is a great track. The lyrics are really funny, especially if you have someone you're not exactly the fondest of right now, that you would dedicate that track to. But yeah, that is a great album and a great song. Excellent pick, Turbo.
Thank you.
Yeah, check that album out, guys. It's if you haven't seen Turbo and I on X screaming about that one, I think it would be worth anyone who's listening to this podcast time to check out the Mac Boogie Overdrive record.
Yeah, and if you happen to know, I don't know, Jim Bocci, it's actually Max Boogie, the guy that did the Fuzz Bubble album.
Oh, okay.
Fuzz Bubble put out one solid album back in the early 2000s, which is kind of a power pop album. I saw that he produced this album, but I didn't realize that he was going under the name Max Boogie. So it's actually him on this album. So
Oh, that's awesome. I
that's
didn't have to check out what was the name of the album that you mentioned that he was on in the
Fuzz Bubble
Fuzz
is
Bubble. Okay. Cool. Can always count on you for multiple things in this episode that I had no idea about. So that's why it's so cool to have you my partner on here. Very, very cool stuff.
thank you.
Awesome. Very good. All right. So thank you, Turbo. All these albums, obviously you can go check it out on Bandcamp and hear us constantly pushing this stuff on X, the really good stuff that we love, just to help you kind of weed through all of the noise and all of the dozens and dozens of albums that come out every week now. We're here to help kind of to get you to those killer things like that Max Boogie Overdrive record, the IOTA record. So speaking of awesome, what we have next is our interview with the legend Tony Reed, and we are super excited to talk with Tony. If from Moss Generator, from Hot Spring Water, from Stone Axe, from Big Scenic Nowhere, producing, mixing, all that stuff. Super excited to have Tony on. So let's go over to that interview now and dig it. All right. So welcome back to the Rich and Turbo Heavy Half Hour. We are really, really pumped to have what we consider a legend, and probably the hardest working man and the most underrated man in heavy rock, Tony Reed, joining us today. Thank you, Tony, for joining us.
Thank you for those super kind words. That's really cool to hear. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I
You
mean,
know.
in our circles, that couldn't be more true. So.
And I, of course, I see it kind of that way myself, especially over the years of work. But I try to keep positive, you know, and just keep moving on. I guess that's all you can do, really. But anyway, nice to be here.
Awesome.
Well, thank you for being here. In our last episode, I interviewed with Todd from Ripple. I jokingly said that you were the godfather of stoner rock. Do you feel that's adequate or something?
I mean this I've kind of touched base on before, and it may seem not unappreciative, but I don't consider myself, I consider the music I make and a part of the scene, which is a wonderful scene, but I don't consider myself that I write in that realm.
Okay.
I feel like it's more than that.
I understand, you know, that. Yeah.
I'm adding so much more to the core sound. When we started the band, we in 2000, we said our foundation is going to be this music we loved growing up. So there were really no, it was Mountain that made me want to do Mosh Generator.
Awesome.
You know, stuff like that. You know, there were a few bands around at that point that were maybe like kind of a springboard for us, which had been like Corrosion and Conformity. But a lot of the real godfathers, which a lot of people would consider Sleep and Caius, Fu Manchu, I had never heard. I mean, honestly, I've only heard like two Caius songs. Well, when I explain that to people, I say it's not that. It's because we're the same age as they are. We all grew up listening to the same thing, and this is what happened from it.
Right.
And so that's how I'm not trying to say anything bad. I just, you know, every band, like if you read interviews of these bands, we don't want to be put into this genre. Like even bands from the 60s or 70s, we don't like being called heavy metal. Like Zeppelin didn't like that. So a lot of that still kind of goes with that. It's not that I don't like being called a stoner rock outfit, but because it's a wonderful scene. I think it relies a lot on the ethics of punk rock as far as being DIY and being very supportive of each other. Cause I play music in other genres and I find it really hard to connect with the other bands. Not like the stoner genre. Like if you need a gig in some weird town, you can get it within like 30 minutes just by putting a post up and there's five people willing to help you out. So that's a wonderful.
The community is always.
Yeah.
Seems to be really great.
That's one of the best parts of the thing.
I always forget about some people will take the negative connotation of the stoner part. I know to me, when I think of it, I just think of it as hard rock or heavy rock. But I know that there's a lot of people that are, if you put that adjective in front of it, and then everybody automatically wants to think that you're just some pothead that doesn't, you know. Right. So
I know it's more than that, you know.
Yeah.
And none of us smoke weed. I never really have. Like, you know, I've done this and that, but that doesn't really mean anything. That doesn't, like you said, it doesn't have anything to do with that.
You know, what's interesting is we're actually in our podcast, we do like a classic record that was influential on like the stoner or hard rock scene. And we're actually doing Mountain Climbing in this episode. So we went back and, cause in my opinion, like Mountain, stoner rock and bands like your band sound more like Mountain to me than anything else. Like, I feel like they're like such a key influence there. And I went back and saw you did a cover of Never in My Life. So what are some of those other bands that you know, that got you into the music that you're doing today?
Well, of course there's Sabbath, which is everybody's foundation.
Yeah.
And they cannot be denied, not even for one second, because I think that Master Reality is the heaviest record ever made. I don't care how many amps you got, how low you tune, you're not going to nail it like that. That record nails it on all levels. And I've been striving for Sabbath Bloody Sabbath. That's my Sabbath record, because it's layered with lots of extra things. Iommi really. So anyway, let's see, you know, we would even add like Van Halen, stuff like that, you know, or we like things. So, and there would be punk rock energy in our music. That's what we're using that. I always liked energetic things happening inside even a slow song. So, what I'm really going for is my favorite bands. And since the band has gone through so many changes, it's hard to nail down any type of thing. And I know you're talking about what made us start. Yeah, I guess it's, I mean, we Maiden and Priest. I mean, so there's a lot of heavy metal. There's a lot of new wave of British heavy metal influence in our music. And so there's that too. Saxon, like there's that Silver Olympus song I'm ripping off, Taking Your Chances, and Heavy Metal Thunder in one riff. So I'm really like, you know, I used to introduce it, this is a Saxon song we wrote, you know, like, or, you know, so yeah, there's that kind of stuff, a lot of that. And because we grew up in that time, so it would have been coming out of the 70s into the early 80s. But I mean, something real close to when we first started was the first Queens of the Stone Age record. I was pretty blown away by that because it had pop sensibility inside of heavy. And that's what I'm into. I'm into pop music. Like I'm into hooks and all that kind of stuff. So when I heard that, I'm like, oh, somebody's hooking it up. Like, you know, and so that was like, okay, we can do this too. You know, so because I was into like a power pop band in the 90s.
Awesome.
Well, it was mixed that. It was like Big Star mixed with the Police, Kiss, and No Means No. So we were like Progressive or King Crimson. But then it was like, you know, because the Police, nobody really realizes like the Police were super talented. They were playing pop songs, but everybody was just kind of going bonkers a lot of the time. And so I would use that as a, and progressive rock is a, has always been a huge thing for me. King Crimson, I'm wearing a King Crimson shirt. Especially King Crimson's in my top four, three or four favorite bands.
You mentioned the pop. We're both big fans of your cover on the Big Scenic Nowhere, the Sarah Smile, man. You really killed that.
Oh, thank you. I was nervous as hell because I'm a big fan of Hall & Oates. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to sing this.
That was,
and it actually went really, really quick because I know the song so well. So hearing it since, you know, and listening to it, it's on my personal Hall & Oates compilation. It's a hit, but I still, you know, I'm way into it. And then we got the keyboard player from Hall & Oates on that song. And I'm like, oh, this dude has to listen to me sing it. Like, but it went cool. Yeah, I was really happy when they came and said, we should do Sarah Smile. I'm like, man, absolutely. You know,
yeah, you nailed the vocals.
Thank you very much.
I think there was a little bit of skepticism for everyone when they saw that as one of the songs coming out on that record. You know, the interesting thing when I said we're not going to fanboy, but like the last, going into this year, you had a top 10 record in my list. You had Time Wounds, which is just amazing. And it came out at the end of the year. Love that. Last year, the Hot Spring Water record, which I know Turbo and I, you know, can't stop listening to even now. And the Big Scenic Nowhere record, like just right off the bat. And this year you made it easy on us. You didn't have to ruin our end of the year list by putting it out in December like you did in the other two. But I'm really interested in how the Big Scenic Nowhere records come, you know, to fruition. Like, what's the process there? How do you get with those guys? And how do you write?
Okay. It's good to talk about this because when people are reviewing this, they have no idea what we do to make these records. It's super involved. So me and Bob and Gary and Bill meet in the desert, go to a studio. And so the two albums, well, we've done it twice where we went in for two or three days and literally like the first time we ever were in the same room together, we set up, they put microphones on, we're all live. And they hit record, and the four of us played music together for the first time, and we did like a 23-minute jam or something. So all we do is go in. Usually, it's Gary that starts. Gary's got the initial riff, and we fall in, and I'm bass, you know, and Bob and Bill, and we just jam. So we have all these jams from two different sessions of 3 days apiece, and then I bring them home and I start editing like, hey, let's, or and then Bob will start to send me notes. Can we cut these sections out? Yeah, okay. And then I'll start overdubbing whatever I think. I've even done full key changes that weren't there. Like I have to manipulate these, what most of the time are one part jams. I have to manipulate them into songs here by editing in the studio, at my studio. And then Bob and I will do notes back and forth. And sometimes Bob will have Gary come back in after we've done all the editing and lay down a guitar over the top. But Bob and I really like manipulate this music into something and turn it into what it is. And sometimes it seems like it's daunting, but it's super challenging too. I'm always been into editing stuff. So this is even upping my editing skills into turning nothing into something or something that appears to be something we meant to do. Because all these songs, like I said, are usually one, maybe two part jams. That's how those are made. And it's real interesting. But like I said, you have to be in the mood too. It's daunting. And if you're not in that headspace to do a lot of thinking about it, then it's not, you know, it's not going to really work. And that's how I work too, even with clients. If like, you know, I'll get to this when I feel like it. You're going to get a better product when I feel like doing it. You know, like instead of, this is just another job. No, wait a minute. You know, I'm feeling this right now. Like, you know, like I'm mixing something right now and it's CD Jesus with Isaiah Mitchell that they recorded live when Earthless were on tour. They came in and recorded some jams. So I'm mixing that, but I'm also adding a bunch of synthesizers. I've turned it into them jamming their style jamming their style into, now it sounds like Noi and Kraftwerk. Like I added a bunch of synthesizers and I have old electronic drum kits. So I'm adding over the top of Mark's drums, like electronic, like weird. So I've been getting into that a lot lately. Anyway, a lot of manipulation there as well. But I feel like it. I've had these tracks for about 2 months or 3 months and I haven't felt like working on. And yesterday I did. So that's kind of what I was doing when I forgot I was supposed to be doing this. I was in the middle of like doing a keyboard part. But anyway, I know we don't have very long and I have super long answers all the time. But
no, it's great. We love it. Okay. You mentioned, you know, the bands that you work with. My actual album of the year so far is the record from Kitson that you were involved with. And we love that one too. Tell us a little bit about that and maybe some of the other bands that have been a really great experience for you to not necessarily play with, but produce, mix, et cetera.
I did an album right after the Kitson record by Daley Thompson from Germany. They flew from Germany and we spent, well, they had like 9 or 10 days in the studio and they were super prepared and did it real quick. And that was real fun because I've mixed a couple of their records where they recorded them there. And every time I would mix it, I wish you guys could have came here. We could have started from scratch. And they did. And it turned out really well. And the Kitson record was, I mean, all those dudes are old friends of mine, like 30 plus years. So they put this together and I was like, man, I think we could really, I really want you guys to try to come up with the money where we can really work on this. And it was one of my most involved productions probably ever, certainly in the last 10 years. Like take, for instance, you know, we did a couple of sets of demos and I would hear the songs and I would hear where somebody was maybe if you played like this. So Randy, who's the drummer, when we were tracking his drums, he had his kit set up and I had a trap kit set up next to him. And we would listen, run down like the verse maybe, and I'll go, can you play this beat? Right, and we would play through that beat. Okay, we're gonna record that. I want you to play this in the verse. And then we would go, you know, sometimes what he was doing was fine, so we were okay. But I found that I needed to get him on the right side of certain beats to make the music more powerful. So we would work on drum parts together. So that's pretty involved because it would be days of doing this and getting just the right feel that we could get. I didn't want to change him too much, but I know he needed to sit on another place that made it more powerful and worked for the simplicity of the songs. Like you, and I had to dumb down bass parts. I'm like, not that, you know, I says, we need to simplify this because that's what makes it work.
Right.
That's what's connecting with people. They don't have to think about listening to it. And so, yeah, we did. I really simplified the bass, the guitars. Chris was pretty locked in, but I had the amps he wanted to use. And I had him do a few different overdubs. Here, do this. And then Scott, I've known Scott, the singer, for over 30 years and been in some bands with him. And I didn't change him a bit. It was just double this. You know, he's the secret weapon.
Yeah, he's a very strong voice.
Yep. And the way he approaches things is different, but totally connectable for people. And it was a process, but I think it turned out well, especially since they hadn't even been together a year. So we were kind of, you know, scraping together enough material to make just a little over an EP. But it seems to be doing well. I could tell that it was something that would connect with, especially like rock radio. It has a rock radio feel to it.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think Turbo and I's only complaint is how long it is. Like, we want more when that record ends.
Yep. That happened on the first Moss record. It was only 32 minutes. And it would be the reviews would be like, it needs to be longer. Like, well, that's all we had, man. Like, we recorded after 6 months of being together. But you know, so that I'm working on that. I did a lot of mastering. I forget. I do so much work that I forget. You know, like, I mean, if I want to name drop, I mean, I just did some Electric Wizard. And, you know, stuff like that. But I do just so much work. It's been really amazing that I can be this active as a engineer, mastering engineer, and a mixing engineer without having any, I've never had to advertise, you know. The scene. It's the people in this scene that just, you know, they'll throw, hey, man, try this guy. It's just so... There's so much connection between everybody. It also keeps me connected. Working with all these bands keeps me connected with the bands that are coming up that are in our scene. So when someone's, you know, messages me and, you know, we're coming through town, you want to play? Yeah, I know who that band is because I either heard about them from paying attention to stuff I'm working on or, you know, well, I guess just paying attention to the scene, but also working in it a lot. And that's pretty important because, you know, the younger kids coming up are the ones that are drawing the younger crowd. So you want to be a part of that to still be relevant. You know, we've been trying to play a lot of all ages and we're finding the kids are just really into it. And that's a plus because that's what really people, the kids are going to use these memories of even when they are high school, they're going to use these things. You'll have them for the rest of your life, kind of, because you're part of their story, you know. And if we can still do that at our age, be a part of some, you know, the youth, that's great. You know, yeah. So that's that.
Y'all are doing Moss Generator's doing a small tour around the Northeast, Northwest, I'm seeing.
I wouldn't call it a tour. It's a lot of shows over the summer, but not too many. You know, there's a couple weekends where we go like Montana and what, but no, it's not any straight touring. I don't really know what that means for the band right now. Cause now it's the original lineup is playing together again, just because we all live near each other. So oddly, it's almost like there's a parallel universe between the two versions of Moss Generator. Like there's literally like things getting released by both bands, which is fine with me. What I really want is to get both rhythm sections in the same room with me. and me in the middle and the two on each side and we're just jamming.
Jamming.
Yep. Yeah, that'd be kind of fun.
That'd be awesome to hear.
Yeah. So yeah, the original lineup's out gigging now because it's easier. Nobody lives across the country, or you know, that kind of stuff. That became a little bit difficult after a while to be that far away. And but I'm not putting that band away. There's always openness. I don't think Moss will ever break up. It'll always just be an open-ended, you know. Right. It's kind of like the Police. The Police never broke up, actually. They just stopped playing together. So, yeah, something like that, yeah.
You.
What about – go ahead.
No, I was going to say, when we treated emails, you mentioned talking about some new stuff you have coming out musically. Anything you want to drop here? Hints of cool new things you might be in release from any of the bands that you're working with?
We have all the material written for the next Hot Spring Water record. That doesn't mean that will all end up or there won't be more. And then we're over halfway through the next Moss Generator record with the original lineup. So that'll be the first one since 2004. So 10 years since that lineup's made a record together, and it's looking pretty interesting. I like to go here and like Time Wounds, like, as you know, is a complete. And I have to say, that's my favorite record I've ever made. Wow. Everybody says that's, you know, the newest one's the best. I mean, there's stuff in that catalog that I don't really like at all, but that one is so honest. That's the kind of music I really like. It mixes something of almost all the aspects of music that I enjoy. And it was supposed to be a double album. So now there's Time Heals, which is coming out, which is the rest of the stuff that we put together with, you know, so it's right from those same sessions. It's just the songs that didn't make it. And I would say there's songs on that that are equally, when I listen to the rough mixes of that, I'm like, man, this is, for me, it's equally as good. Because Time Wounds, I can listen to. There's none of the other records I make I can listen to. Like, I'll get a record from the records came in today, a new album, I look at it, go, next. Because I already spent so much time with it, you know, mixing it and recording it and all that. And I've already, by the time those come out, usually I'm way beyond. I'm a forward.
Staying in motion.
Yeah. Like, everything's always, I already know what's happening, you know, down the road. So, but yeah, Time Wounds is my favorite. And that Hot Spring Water, I'm having a real hard time getting that band out of this circuit that we have that's kind of in our Western Washington region. Not even Seattle. I mean, we played Seattle, but we can't find a circuit. And that's what I'm saying about the difference between like the heavy stoner scene and then this other kind of more country rock / power pop stuff, that I can't find a circle of people that will just let you in and help you. And which is a bummer, because Hot Spring Water is probably my favorite band I've ever played live in. It's super fun live. Like, and it's, you know, we can do 2 hour sets and I could still sing another 2 hours. My voice fits so well in that. And there's two guitar players. So there's some support in that, but yeah. So that Hot Spring, another Moss. And then I'm thinking about a reissue of the first Stone Axe record, which has been way out of print for like 10 years.
It's really funny, but you say that, because one of our buddies said, we asked, you know, anything you want us to ask Tony, he said, does he have an extra copy of the first Stone Axe record for us? So he will be very excited to hear that that's being repressed.
I do not have an extra one. Yep. And then that question has come up a lot. I mean, that record, I know, because I've been putting stuff out on my own label. Like, there's something that just actually came out. It's not even out yet, but I got it this week, and it's a Moss compilation of songs from the first five records. And it's what we're playing now. We're playing older material. So when you come to the merch table, and you don't know who we are, I can just go, or, you know, that we haven't seen you much, I can just say, hey, this is what you want. If you liked what you saw, we probably played all of these songs tonight. And that's the kind of stuff that I put on my own label. And mostly, you know, the direct fans will buy it, but it'll sell at shows. So I do records like that on my own label where I'm not trying to, you know, get out into the world with them. But so there's that. So I guess that's something that's coming out, because it'll be up for sale, I think, maybe tomorrow or early next week. But I don't know, you know, I don't know what big scenic just happens when it happens. So we haven't even talked about that. I might be reforming my hardcore band from the 80s. So there's that. Well, Moss Generator made an album, an EP called Lies of Liberty. And it was all hardcore songs I wrote in the 80s that we re-recorded. Well, now, because that was the band name, was Lies of Liberty, but Moss Generator recorded these songs. So I think I'm going to just get some dudes. We've been talking about doing that, and just so we could open for MDC or something. You know, any bands that come through, we can get these gigs with them and play just full, you know, hardcore.
Oh, now you've opened up a whole can of worms for me here. What are your hardcore influences from the 80s? So what bands would you call out for there?
There was a band from Fresno called Capital Punishment. They're like one of the greatest bands of all time. They made this record called Push Comes to Shove, When Push Comes to Shove. And that record's killer. Of course, you know, Discharge, the classics, Black Flag, a lot. Subhumans were actually hugely influential because they were very diverse. Subhumans are really diverse. And that's what I liked about them. They could make an album that has a song, a whole one song on a whole side. So they were mixing this progressive rock thought with punk rock. I love Crass, Rudimentary Peni. I have a tendency to like things that are on the heavier side. I didn't really get too much into like skate punk or things like that. It was a little not light for me, but I didn't, you know, I liked it when it was real aggressive and heavy, like Discharge. I love Discharge. Discharge is probably one of the biggest influences. But I would mix some of those throughout, you know, Discharge, Subhumans, like I said. Yeah. I mean, there's tons. I still have tons of those records. Crucifix, you know, I love that record. Bad Posture. Yeah. Yeah. Now I'm going to be listening to this when we get down here.
Turbo, I interrupted you, Turbo. You were going to ask a question.
I believe it was answered. I was going to ask him about Stone Axe, but he just discussed that already.
Yeah, and that's about all that's going to happen with that. Like, you know, I get asked about that fairly regularly, and it just, you know, it's something that just fizzled. I was done doing that. You know, I also realized that even though Drew was an amazing singer and we worked really well together, I like singing. I like singing the feel of the music that I write. I want to be the one conveying what I feel when I wrote the riff.
Oh, okay.
You know, and so that's why I just kind of went back to Moss. And oddly enough, Hot Spring Water, that first record was written in 2011, and it was supposed to be a Stone Axe record. It was supposed to be Stone Axe doing a country rock record, because we were just going all over the 60s and 70s feel. We were picking up from wherever. And Drew wasn't showing up to rehearsals, so we just finished a lot of the music, and I worked on it over the course of like 10 years. And then like, let's do this. You know, let's make this into a band. And then now we're working on album 4.
Awesome. We hear, I'm in Central Florida. I feel like there's a lot of almonds in Hot Spring Water. Maybe, you know, come on down here. We'll get you hooked up there. Find some people in a little Southern rock scene and get you some more love with that record, because we love it.
The Almond Brothers, a lot. and it may not be, I mean, to me, it's obvious, but I love Barnstorm, Joe Walsh.
Oh, yeah.
First album and those few after that. Of course, Neil Young and Crazy, as we've been compared to that, but I'm starting to add more like Tommy Two Tone or whatever, like that 80s kind of Janet, who can I turn to, all that kind of stuff. That's kind of coming into the new material. But yeah, you know, not all of it. It's getting synthesizer based from time to time too, because I like that kind of stuff.
I don't know if you're into Dwight Twilley, but I hear Twilley in your stuff too.
Really?
In the Hot Spring Water stuff.
And that's strange because I just started investigating him like a year and a half ago. I was in a record store and they were playing. I'm like, what is this? Like, you know, I was connecting with it. Like, right then, and Dwight Twilley. I'm like, okay, guess what I'm going to go after? Yeah, I like that for sure. It makes sense to me. And that's that pop part of it. And that's I would have thought that more people would be into this. It's a strange feeling, and we get good responses when we play, but there's something about Hot Spring Water when I play it on stage and we're not getting the response, because sometimes we just play bars where people aren't there for music, right? Yeah. We do those kind of gigs, and in that band is one of the only ones where I can be playing and go, if people don't like this, they're wrong. Like, this is great music. This is super cool. A lot of the other things I've done, I always have weird feelings about it. Is this good? Like, you know, or is this not going over well? But in Hot Spring, I'm the other way. The confidence is like full. It's really bizarre that it would be that way. But it feels good to have that confidence and not always be kind of second guessing yourself or questioning what you do, which I do often. And, but yeah, that's nice. So I would love to come to Florida.
Come on down. Come on.
I haven't played Florida since 93.
Wow. It's time. You got a place, to stay here in Melbourne, Florida. Melbourne, we're just east of Orlando. So a couple hours from Jacksonville, a couple hours from Miami. So midway.
All right. Yeah.
So Turbo, anything else you want to ask Tony as we wrap up our time together? We'd love to have you back on if you'll come.
Anytime. Man, I love talking, man. Like, even about if you have records you want to talk about. Oh, today we're going to talk about this. Oh yeah, I'll get on board.
Love that. Yeah. Love it.
Yep.
No, other than the hopeful series that I'd like to get started with, the Christmas music, heavy Christmas music. This goes, is there any soulful Andy Bing Crosby songs you want to sing?
I would probably do something off How the Grinch Stole Christmas or something. You know what I mean? Like, if there was choices, if you could choose Christmas songs, you know. If you get into doing that, let me know. Because I've thought about that too. I've thought about that, and I've thought about a heavy tribute to Motown.
Oh, heck yeah.
That'd be awesome. You know? Yep. You would kill on that. And like, every comp that comes out, I see, like, I think the new Sparks one, you have something on that one too. So there's always either like a Moss or a Tony Reed solo, or you guys, you're hitting just about all those like cover comps and stuff. And they're always killing.
Thank you. And I do it. I mean, I do it if I like it. I didn't do the Budgie one because I'm not a fan of that record. There's nothing on that record. I like Budgie, but that record just didn't have anything that I was really into. So I'm not just being on these to be on them. I'm being on them because, well, I really would love to do, you know, the Spark song. And luckily I got the one I wanted and all that. So yeah, that one was great. That was super fun. But anyway, yeah, I like being on that stuff. Obviously I like doing covers. I'm going to put up something pretty soon. It's probably 50 tracks of covers I've done.
Awesome.
It would be just me. Then there's going to be one that'll be Moss, because Moss has probably done at least 30, including like live. We would do something called Heavy Metal Jukebox. And when we would get kind of towards the end of the set, everybody was really kind of lit up, people could just call out songs or bands and we would just start playing them. My buddy's like, dude, you can play the beginning of everything. I'm like, that's all they want to hear. If they hear the first 30 or 40 seconds, they'll go away and say, hey, man, they played whatever. You know, they played Rush last night. Well, we played the beginning of Spirit of Radio or something like that, you know. Anyway, so, yeah, I like doing covers. I think they're a learning tool, you know.
Yeah, that's cool. I think you had some stuff that's no longer available that I was hoping from Moss Generator Live. I think you did some Van Halen or some other, I don't remember what it is now, but I was like, I can't find it anymore.
On vinyl or on the, there's on Bandcamp, there's the one where we did Van Halen Light Up the Sky.
Yeah.
And Air Dance from Sabbath. And then there's a live version of Anthem from Rush in Canada. anyway.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Tony, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the, it's only our second interview, second episode, just you and Todd. I mean, back to back, what more could we really ask for? So
all right.
We appreciate it. Definitely gonna be reaching out again, especially when it gets a little bit closer, when the new Moss or the new Hot Spring comes out, we'll get you on and we'll do maybe a record of the month or something where we just talk about records and see what we all like. If that would be cool with you.
Man, I would be way into that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty flexible. I'm my own boss, you know, so I can, if I don't forget, I was in the middle.
That's very excusable.
Yeah, we get that.
But yeah, we really appreciate you taking the time out.
All right.
Let's let you get back to doing it. Thanks a lot, Tony. Have a great rest of your day and keep rocking. Awesome stuff. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about our classic album of the week. Basically an album that has been a huge influence on, you know, whatever you call this music, stoner, you know, heavy rock, doom, all that. Last week we talked about Blue Cheer. This week we're going to talk about Mountain and the album Climbing. And to me, when I, you know, obviously you're going to hear Tony Reid talk a little, you just heard Tony talk about Mountain a little bit. And his influence and Leslie West's influence and the song from Mountain. But to me, when I listen to a lot of the stoner rock now, I hear a ton of Leslie West in those bands. And the first time this kind of clicked for me was when I was listening, I think it was the Sucking in the 70s comp, and Five Force Johnson did a cover of Never in My Life. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, I completely see the connection here. And I talked with Jay on the Hook Rocks podcast that I'm now obviously slinging for. So check out the Hook Rocks on wherever you get your podcasts. But basically, I when he asked me what I thought was a big influence on stoner rock, to me, Mountain is huge. And Climbing being one of those albums that I think is should be in like the Mount Rushmore of proto stoner. Is that a thing? Proto stoner?
Proto metal.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. They don't get the respect they need or the recognition, mostly outside, you know, musicians obviously give them the recognition they need. Most people, you know Mississippi Queen and that's about it, which is an awesome song. And it was included back in the 80s when you used to get those comps.
Yeah.
KTEL.
Was it like the Freedom Rock comp?
Well, not like that, but like KTEL had Masters of Metal. And
oh, yeah.
Another one where you get, where they try to introduce you to all these different bands. And I had one called Metal Mania, came out in 1985, and it had Mississippi Queen on it with all these metal artists. And I thought that was really weird. But at the, you know, at the time, nowadays, it's like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, that's, it's an influence on all these other bands. And it's, you know, that album is a really strong album. It's helped produced by Felix Pappalardi, who produced Disraeli Gears, Cream. So, and he comes on and plays bass on this album. And he's, you know, Leslie wanted to be Cream, basically. He's like, why can't we be like these people? And his brother was like, well, we're not good enough. But evidently they became good enough and they were basically like Cream but louder, and without maybe the psychedelic aspect of it. But It's just, and there's a lot of great songs. You know, Never in My Life is on there. Silver Paper, Sitting on a Rainbow. Yeah. Those songs would be the songs that I would push for people to get into, check out.
You always, I always complain about things being overproduced or, you know, like too slick or like, to me, Climbing is how I want albums to sound. I want every album to be sound and produced like Climbing. And, you know, obviously that goes, like you mentioned, it goes back to Cream. It goes back to what he did with them. But like,
I did say Cream and not Creed, didn't I?
I thought we had a no Creed mention rule.
But in my mind, I just said, wait a second. I hope I didn't screw that up.
No, you didn't. Not at all.
All right. Cool.
Really funny, though. But yeah, no, the influence of this album to me, like, and I'd be surprised if a lot of the bands didn't mention Leslie West as a huge influence on them. And or maybe just didn't even realize that he is, and they need to check out Mountain and understand where a lot of that came from, because the riffs there, the sound, the guitar tone, all that stuff, to me, you know, just screams.
Yeah, his vibrato, his tone is magnificent.
Absolutely. Very cool. Well, yeah, check out Climbing. You know, so far we've talked about the first Blue Cheer record, Mountain, Climbing. I think we'll hit some other ones, but we'll start to cover like the origins of stoner rock, Mount Rushmore. And I think you'd put these two on there without a doubt. Oh, yeah. Maybe we'll cover the other two heads over the next couple episodes as we think about what those are. I'm sure we'll have something with something Sabbath related on there, and maybe we'll see what else comes to mind in some episodes later on. But cool, killer.
I don't know. Say Leaf Hound or Sir Lloyd Baltimore or Budgie might be.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of potential there. We might have to put a poll out there and see, you know, Mount Rushmore of my newly termed proto stoner. It's going to be a thing. Look out.
But I also think Mount Rushmore can be just more than four.
We need more heads on that mountain. I got you.
But that was the initial plan, wasn't it? The guy just passed away too soon, and he was supposed to do more than four. He was going to add on to it.
Another tidbit that I had no idea about that I'm learning from Turbo.
I'm thinking that's true. It may be BS. Who knows? But sounds good.
Sounded coming from you. Awesome. Well, thank you, Turbo. Thanks again for everybody listening. Again, you can find me on X at FuzzDoomRip and writing for Musipedia of Metal, doing a bunch of reviews there, and on Doom Charts as a contributor there. And Turbo, you want to take us out?
Oh, yeah. I just, till next time, I want you to keep it loud, keep it heavy, take it easy.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody.